Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You're listening ad-free on Wondery Plus. It's 8 a.m. on Boxing Day, December 26, 1776, in the city of Trenton, New Jersey. Inside the bedroom of a small house on King Street, a group of soldiers do their best to shake off their exhaustion and climb out of bed. One of them, a younger man, wakes up with a musket still clutched in his hands. He pries himself out of bed and then stretches long and hard. He's already dressed for combat, but that's nothing new. He and his fellow troops have grown accustomed to sleeping in their uniforms. This young man is part of a force of 1,500 Hessians, German soldiers for hire. They've been on the payroll of the British Empire ever since the American colonies declared their war of independence, and this soldier has been earning his paychecks. For weeks, the Hessians have endured constant harassment. Nearly every day, it seems, the colonial forces strike at their posts and patrols. Even last night, on Christmas, the colonials launched a surprise attack. The Hessians managed to ward them off, but today the young soldier prays the colonials will give them a break so they can get some much-needed rest. But then, from outside in the street, they hear one of their own shouting an alarm, screaming in German, "The enemy! The enemy!" When the shooting starts, the young soldier and the rest of his comrades grip their weapons tight and head for the door. When they bustle out into the main road, the young soldier sees an astonishing sight, though. His fellow Hessians scattering in all directions as colonial soldiers on horseback stream into the snow-covered streets of Trenton from two sides. Backed by the sound of thundering cannon, the colonials are heavily armed and they vastly outnumber the Hessians. Almost immediately, the young soldier can see that victory is impossible. So instead of defending the town, he drops his musket and runs for his life. Despite the relentless harassment from colonial forces, the Hessians assumed they were on the winning side of the ongoing conflict between the British Empire and the American colonies until the morning of December 26, 1776. For American General George Washington, the small but pivotal win at the Battle of Trenton sets off a series of victories that prove the American Revolution is far from over. And soon, Washington and his army will perform an even more extraordinary military feat, one that will turn the tide of the war and alter the course of history after they win the Battle of Princeton on January 3, 1777. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is January 3rd, 1777, the Battle of Princeton. It's December 26th, 1776, in the city of Trenton, New Jersey, just over a week before the Battle of Princeton. General George Washington, the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army of the 13 colonies, observes the Battle of Trenton from the high ground at the north of the city. From here, he can direct his army of 2,400 men and witness the action from a good vantage point. He has a decent view of the two main streets at the center of Trenton, although they are now clouded with musket smoke. But the Hessians are easy to spot in their brightly colored uniforms. Among them, Washington recognizes the uniform of Colonel Johann Rahl, the commander of the Hessian Brigade. Rahl rides a horse through Trenton, trying to regain control of the city, but it's a lost cause. Washington's plan for this surprise attack was simple but effective. He divided his men into two flanking columns that would attack the city simultaneously under the cover of darkness, backed by cannon fire. The outnumbered Hessians are already buckling under the onslaught, and Washington feels proud that his plan is working and that his army is performing, especially considering what a poor state they were in just days before. Ever since the Continental Army's defeat in New York at the Battle of Long Island, an alarming number of his soldiers have deserted. Washington needs a big victory to boost morale and recruitment. He knows that if he cannot secure some key victories for the Continental Army very soon, morale will plummet even more, and this glorious revolution that he and so many others have devoted their lives to will be doomed to failure. To that end, his army has just performed a daring feat that will go down as one of the most significant moments in American history. Late yesterday evening, under the cover of darkness, Washington and his army managed to row themselves and their heavy artillery over the freezing Delaware River in order to carry out the surprise attack on Trenton. It was a hugely perilous and logistical challenge, especially considering that most of his men can't swim. At any point, thick packs of ice could have collided with their boats, pulling them into the icy depths. Washington considers it a miracle that this didn't happen. Instead, in the early hours of Boxing Day, he and his men successfully made it across the Delaware and immediately began the grueling 9-mile march to Trenton. Washington had been privately concerned that putting his men through such an ordeal the night before a battle might break their spirits, but as he watches the vigor which with they attacked the Hessian garrison, he realizes he was right to believe in them. Washington watches as Colonel Rahl unsuccessfully attempts to rally his troops and establish a defensive perimeter. The Hessians have garnered a reputation for being formidable opponents, but today Washington's men prove the tougher combatants as they surge through the streets, shooting Hessians down on every corner. Washington feels little pity, considering what they did to his troops on Long Island. Just then, Washington hears a gunshot crack above the fray. He watches as Colonel Rahl, the Hessian commander, slumps over his horse and falls to the ground. With their commander dead, it doesn't take long for the remaining Hessians to throw down their weapons and surrender. Washington exhales in relief. With the battle over, Washington and his generals assess their victory. It soon established that 22 Hessian soldiers were killed, including Colonel Rahl. 92 were wounded. 900 have been taken prisoner. The rest have fled the city. By contrast, Washington is informed that his army has only suffered 2 deaths this morning, with only a handful of casualties. But Washington is not ready to celebrate just yet. However morale-boosting this victory at Trenton might be, Washington knows it's just the beginning of his campaign. The more pivotal battle will take place just north of here on January 3, 1777, in Princeton. There, General George Washington will lead his newly emboldened troops into a battle that will turn the tide of the war. It's December 30th, 1776, 4 days before the Battle of Princeton, on the south side of Assunpink Creek, a small tributary that flows into the Delaware River, which divides New Jersey from Pennsylvania. General George Washington rides atop a large black steed and addresses his assembled troops of over 2,000 men. He knows the outcome of the appeal he is about to make is vital to the success of the American Revolution. He is also aware that he's already asked a great deal of these brave soldiers. But he has no choice but to persuade them all to keep fighting, even though as of tomorrow, most of them no longer have to. On December 31st, the enlistment of many of his soldiers will be up, meaning his men can legally leave the army and return home. To entice them to stay and fight, he's offered them a bounty of $10 per man, the equivalent of just over $300 today. But Washington knows this small amount of money alone will not compel them. He hopes to appeal to their sense of duty. He tells them, "My brave fellows, you have done all I asked you to do, and more than could be reasonably expected. But your country is at stake, your wives, your houses, and all that you hold dear. If you will consent to stay only 1 month longer, you will render that service to the cause of liberty and to your country, which you probably can never do under any other circumstances." On completing his speech, Washington waits to see if anyone will step forward to show their allegiance. For some long seconds, it appears nobody will. Then one soldier steps forward, then another. Before long, most of the assembled troops have stepped forward to declare their loyalty to Washington and to the revolution. Washington nods in appreciation, knowing that with strong-hearted men like these, anything is possible, even defeating the British. It's January 2nd, 1777, on the north side of Assunpink Creek in Trenton, New Jersey. Lieutenant General Charles Cornwallis, commander of the British infantry, is frustrated. He marched here with thousands of red-coated soldiers to take back Trenton from the Americans. Cornwallis expected to easily overwhelm Washington's forces, which are only roughly half the size of his. But the Continental Army has not been so easy to defeat. As Cornwallis marched towards Trenton, Washington's troops employed delay tactics, repeatedly attacking Cornwallis and then retreating in an effort to buy time. Washington used that time to build a defensive line on the south side of Assunpink Creek. Washington and his men have formed ranks safely behind it. And now Cornwallis and his troops stand on the north side of the creek. In order to attack, Cornwallis's men must first make it across a small wooden bridge. Three times now, Cornwallis has ordered his men to cross that bridge, but each time his soldiers were repelled by American cannons. The bridge is now red with British blood, and night is falling. Cornwallis is irritated, but confident that Washington is pinned down with nowhere to run. So Cornwallis orders his men to make camp for the night, telling them, "We've got the old fox now. We'll go over and bag him in the morning." Throughout the night, the British try their best to keep a watchful eye on the Continental Army. They can't see the enemy over the high trees, but they do see the flames of their fires flickering through the branches. And they hear the clang of their tools as the Americans prepare to set up permanent camp. At dawn the next day, Cornwallis orders his men to charge the bridge for a fourth time. He's delighted when they meet little resistance, but when Cornwallis gets to the other side, he is astonished to discover that the fox has slipped away. Instead of encountering Washington's full force, the British find the camp deserted. Soon Cornwallis learns the truth. General Washington knew he was outmanned, so he ordered a small number of his men to clang tools and burn fires high throughout the night to trick the British into believing they were making camp. At the same time, he marched the bulk of his army northeast to Princeton to launch another surprise attack. It's January 3rd, 1777. American Brigadier General Hugh Mercer and over 300 troops make their way through an orchard in the early morning light. Mercer and his detachment are here in support of General Washington's plan to surround and attack the village of Princeton, Cornwallis's primary route of communication with British-occupied New York. Right now, Mercer and his men are advancing on a local farm not far from Princeton. Mercer has orders to scout the area, locate any enemy soldiers, and clear them out. But Mercer and his men are in grave danger. 2,000 British troops have already spotted them and are poised to attack. Last night, these soldiers left Princeton and marched south to Trenton, hoping to attack General Washington. But on their way, they spotted Mercer and his men on the march. Now, the British officer in charge orders an attack. The stillness of the morning is interrupted by a cacophony of gunfire. Eventually, the British troops charge with their bayonets in the air, and when they see General Mercer at the center of the ferocious fight, they are certain he must be George Washington. The British soldiers surround, taunt, and stab Mercer repeatedly until he falls to the ground mortally wounded. The British roar in triumph, but they have not killed the man they think they have. Mercer is one of the highest-ranking men in Washington's army. He's a fierce patriot and one of Washington's dear friends. So when Washington learns of Mercer's death, he is devastated. He sends a militia to aid what remains of Mercer's detachment. But seeing the state of Mercer's men, the militia begins to flee. Eventually, Washington rides into the fray himself with reinforcements and rallies the fleeing militia, leading a counterattack against the British troops that places him directly in the field of fire. One of Washington's officers pulls his hat over his eyes to avoid seeing his commander killed in the crossfire. The two armies fire incessantly, and soon the field is completely obscured in a cloud of smoke. When it clears, Washington is unscathed. He waves his men forward. The overwhelmed British are forced to break ranks and retreat from the city. Galloping after them, Washington cries out, "It's a fine fox chase, my boys." Soon after this, Washington drives what's left of the British garrison out of Princeton. Washington achieves a well-publicized victory, one that renews confidence in America's ability to break free of British rule. And as a result, over the coming months, many new recruits will join the Patriot cause. Just 2 weeks earlier, the Continental Army had been on the verge of defeat. But now, thanks to the military prowess of George Washington and the resilience of his men, the American Revolution looks poised for success. But the War of Independence is far from over. There will be 6 more years of fighting before ultimate victory is achieved. But thanks to the stunning set of victories that culminated at Princeton on January 3, 1777, the eventual success of that revolution felt for a moment inevitable. Next on History Daily, January 6, 1994, the world of figure skating is plunged into controversy after an attack on a competitor at the U.S. Championships in Detroit. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Music and sound design by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by James Benmore. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.